So today I'm going to give a straight Srimad Bhagavatam class on the ninth chapter of the first canto. That's the passing away of Bhishma Deva in the presence of Lord Krishna. I want to speak on the whole chapter in an overview way. Overview means a general outline or summary. There's been an overview has been done by Burijan Prabhu of the Bhagavad Gita. And one of the important things you do in an overview is you divide the material up into the different natural sections. It's not so much that the speaker does that, but you discover how the compiler of the scripture did it. And then it makes for appreciation of how he composed it carefully, and you can go from section to section with concentration. In this, in the book I wrote for the colleges, Readings in Vedic Literature, I did that for the Bhagavad Gita. We published the Prabhupada's translations of the Bhagavad Gita, and then I put it into different sections, like chapter 15, the banyan tree of the material world, that was 1 to 4, and then Krishna's abode, 5 and 6, the struggling jivas, 7 to 11, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, 12 to 20. So we'll go through the ninth chapter that way, and there are many wonderful things about it. I find two things as really chief that I'll point out as I come up to them. The first section is from 1 to 10 shlokas, which is like a setting of the scene. It's at the scene of the massacre, the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and Bhishma Dev is lying on the bed of arrows about to pass away. And the Pandavas and Lord Krishna also come there. I have a tape by Prabhupada. I'll play at this point just to put us on sound footing with his sound vibration, where he talks about one particular outstanding characteristic of Bhishma Dev. Yeah. And the volume is okay. That's here.
So at the time of death, they could utilize how to give up this body. That is perfection of yoga. The yogis, they can give up the life or give this, relinquish this body according to his own desire, not compelled by the material conditions. That is yoga. Generally, a man dies under the obligation of material laws. But a yogi, he controls in such a way that he leads the Bhajan of Bhishmadeva. Bhishmadeva especially, his father gave him the benediction. The soul of, he would not himself like to die, he'll never die. This one, he got this benediction from his father, because his promise was very stern, severe. You know the story, that Bhishma's father was captivated by the young girl, Satyavati, and he wanted to marry her. The Kshatriya could do that. But Satyavati's father disagreed. Although he was king, he could marry anyone he likes. But his father is still with the permission of the parents. So the father denied, "No, I cannot give you my daughter to you." Why? that because you have got grown-up son, and he will be the king, why my daughter shall be married with you, just like my son, no? So Bhishma Dev could understand that my father desires to marry this young girl, Satyavati, and there is some hindrances, so he approached him. Hey, why don't you give my father your daughter? He said, because you are his eldest son, you become king. So he immediately promised that, no, your daughter's son will become king. I will not become king. Give my father. So he said, no, no, still it is not possible. Why? Because you may not become king, then your son will become king. I don't want that. So in this way, Bhishma Dev said, no, then I shall not marry. Is that all right? Still, and then he gave his daughter. Yes, Satyavati. So, his father, Santanu Maharaj, saw that Bhishma is so affectionate to his father that for the father's same gratification, he has sacrificed his own. So he gave him this benediction, my dear son. You are so stern in keeping a promise, so I give you this benediction that he will never die unless you desire. Therefore, Bhishma Dev was lying on the bed of arrows, and he left this material world when he desired. So the yogis can do
that. Promise to remain brahmachari was later challenged by no less than Parsaram, who had a particular lady he wanted Bhishma to marry. Bhishma refused, and so they fought and fought and fought. And then Parsaram became very impressed with Bhishma as a fighter. He could not force him. So I was saying this opening scene is they come to Bhishma Dev on the bed of arrows, and it's mentioned in the very first verse that Maharaj Yudhisthira was very afraid of the reaction he would get for all the people who were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, who you could say were killed just so that he could become the king. And to get some understanding of what this was, he went to Bhishma as a wise person. You might say, why go to Bhishma? You should find, why not ask Krishna, or go to some ascetic? Why go to the warrior? But Krishna wanted to show that Bhishma is not just a fighter, but he is a great seer. And so even though Krishna was their relative and great friend, it's as if Krishna couldn't bring solace to Maharaj Yudhisthira. And they thought, well, if anyone can, it'll be Bhishma. Help me understand why this carnage took place. And not just them, but all great rishis, similar to when Maharaj Parikshit passed away, all great rishis came, and sages, Brahmins, and so forth, to gather around in a mood of respect as he's passing away. And there's nice paintings of it. Up real close to Bhishma are the five boys, now grown men, but they look like boys in their gentleness before Bhishma, and Krishna also is there. Of course, it's an extraordinary picture that all these arrows are shot through his body, but he's transcendental to this situation in terms of bodily pain, especially when he sees Lord Krishna there. I'll read just one verse, number 10. Lord Sri Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, yet he manifests his transcendental form by his internal potency. This very Lord Krishna was sitting before Bhishma Dev, and since Bhishma Dev knew of his glories, he worshipped him duly. So he very much appreciated that Krishna was there. Bhishma Dev and all members of the Yadu dynasty knew that Krishna was simultaneously a very dear relative, but also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That understanding is different than the residents of Vrindavan, who just know one thing. They just know that Krishna is their relative or their beloved, and they don't know that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there's this mixture of realizations, as stated there. So he was very grateful that Krishna had come. Then the next section I found runs from 11 to 17. And this is where Yudhisthira gets the answer to his question. And so it's very important. And I find it's very, one verse in purport I'll bring our attention to is very applicable for us. Don't think this chapter about a great general, Mahajan, and how he left his body at will has no application for us. It does. So they were, of course, on opposite sides in the fight. And it was like the enemy. He's the enemy about to die. And you think, well, they might come and gloat over it. But they had reverted to their true feelings, that he was always the grand uncle or grandfather, protector of those boys. He had raised them up and always seen to their welfare. But for political reasons, he was on the other side in the fight. And now they reverted to their affectionate feelings. And so, seeing them like that, the first thing he had to say was, oh, you poor boys, Pandavas, and your mother had to undergo so many tribulations. There were so many intrigues against you to kill you. You didn't really... It was hard to even be alive after all you went through. So he began crying tears like that, not thinking the opposite, that, oh, look what you did to me. But he was looking at them and feeling so sorry about what they had gone through all those years in exile. But in one sense, that's not what Maharaj Yudhisthira came there to find out, to get that sympathy. But he had something else weighing on his heart. And that was, why did all this take place? Just so that I'm now supposed to become the king. So that's answered. Especially in these verses. So actually he's explaining both at the same time. He's explaining why the Pandavas had to go through their ordeal and why now Maharaj Yudhisthira has to understand why there was a war and everything. In my opinion, this is all due to inevitable time under whose control everyone and every planet is carried, just as the clouds are carried by the wind. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion, Bhima, the great fighter with a club, the great bowman Arjuna with his mighty weapon, Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas. And now, here's text 16. O King, no one can know the plan of Lord Sri Krishna, even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. So, this verse and the beginning of the purport are something that we can turn to again and again when something happens in our life, like a setback, and we wonder, why does it happen? Especially we may be thinking that we were trying to serve Krishna. We're not ordinary non-devotees. And yet we get some severe reverse, and which is even the cause where we're acting for the cause of the Sankirtan movement, and something happens against us. Why is that? So he's saying that no one can really understand Krishna's plans. Purport. The bewilderment of Maharaj Yudhisthira over his past sinful acts and the resultant sufferings, etc., is completely negated by the great authority Bhishma, one of the 12 authorized persons. Bhishma wanted to impress upon Maharaj Yudhisthira that since time immemorial, no one, including such demigods as Shiva and Brahma, could ascertain the real plan of the Lord. So what can we understand about it? It is useless also to inquire about it. This expression is a little bit like the verse which is even more explicit, Tattenu Kampam Sukshamik Shamana. When a devotee faces a reverse in life, he takes it as a token reaction to his karma. Not the full weight, but since he's a devotee, he gets only a token. And he bears up with that by offering obeisances to Krishna and going on with his service in a loving way. That person who acts like that, he's entitled to go back to Godhead. That says even more than here. But here you can understand that you don't have to beat your head against the wall, as we say, to try to understand something, because Krishna's plan is not always understandable to us. That's why he's God and we're jivas, and he's working things out in all their complicated intermeshing karma, who gets bad, who gets good, what really is good for you down the line instead of just now, how he's protecting your devotional service and so on. You can understand it even if you were told what it's for. Imagine when you try, if you try to tell somebody who's bent on sense gratification, like a child or someone like that, why they can't have something they want right now, there's nothing that will satisfy them. So then you have to say that you don't understand the plan, but you have to trust my plan. This is what he tells Maharaj Yudhisthira. So that's verses 11 to 17, his expressing of compassion toward the Pandavas and relieving Maharaj Yudhisthira of his anxiety as to why this happened. Now the next section, you can almost see him turning his attention towards Krishna, with more awareness that Krishna is a very special presence. So he thanks Krishna for coming there, and he glorifies Krishna, that although it's only in our ignorance we act as if he's just a cousin or nephew or something like that, but he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's the Brahma Jyoti, he's in everyone's heart, he's causing everything to happen, and yet that same person in a family relationship appears before us. And since Bhishma is about to leave his body at his own will, and we'll read, but Prabhupada was talking about yogis, not only that they can leave their body at their will, but as is taught in the Bhagavad Gita in the 8th chapter, there are certain times when it's good to leave. It's not that you can always stay alive in these bodies, but there are auspicious times when the sun is rising to the north and the bright time and the dark time. So they leave at the auspicious time, good for traveling back to Godhead or to a higher planet as they wish to go. So as we'll hear a little later, that time comes. And so Bhishma is passing away mainly because Krishna is there. He wants to pass away. Reminds us of Haridas Thakur, who wanted to pass away, first of all, before Lord Chaitanya passed away, so he wouldn't have to live on afterwards without the Lord. He couldn't bear that. But also he asked, if I can die in your presence, And they had a tumultuous kirtan, and Lord Chaitanya put his feet on Haridas Thakur, and Haridas Thakur passed away. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, so Bhishma Dev is asking for something like that. And he's grateful that Krishna has come. There's actually, in a purport later, Prabhupada says, all of this is attainable for us today. And to anyone who looks upon Krishna at the time he dies, think of looking at a picture of Krishna with faith also. Or hearing Krishna's holy names. So, in this section, he's turning his attention more towards Krishna. I wanted to read. Oh, I did. Okay, next section is 18 to 24. And I'll read 24. May my Lord, who is four-handed and whose beautifully decorated lotus face with eyes as red as the rising sun is smiling, kindly await me at that moment when I quit this body. Purport. Bhishma Dev knew well that Lord Krishna is the original Narayan. His worshipable deity was four-handed Narayan, but he knew that four-handed Narayan is a plenary expansion of Lord Krishna. Indirectly, he desired Lord Sri Krishna to manifest himself in his four-handed feature of Narayan. Oh, there's a nice statement in here that one reason he's grateful that Krishna is there, I already said. But another reason is he very humbly thinks that when I die, I'm not going to be able to see Krishna. It's not like I'm so advanced spiritually that I'll go to where Krishna is. So at least I want to see him up until I die. That was his humility. Of course, that's not the fact. He will see Krishna in the next life, but he's thinking, I may not. So let me hold on as long as I can. And it's true that he's ready to go wherever the Lord sends him in the next life too. So if I retain an impression of Krishna, even if I go somewhere lower, I may continue to serve Krishna and think of Krishna. So you must have noticed, and of course most of you have read this before, but you may have refreshed your memories, that Bhishma Dev has a relationship with the Lord in the Lord's four-armed form. I have a nice excerpt from a conversation about this with Prabhupada and Rebati Nandan. Prabhupada says, Majajino Yanti Mam. Krishna devotees, they go directly, especially those who are worshipping Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they directly go to Krishna Loka, Rebati Nandan. What about the case of Bhishma Dev, where he knew about Krishna in Goloka, and he went to Krishna as Parthasarathi? Prabhupada, no, Krishna, he understood Krishna as Narayan. He will go to Vaikuntha, Bhishma Dev, Rebati Nandan. But he had full knowledge of everything as a Mahajan. He knew also Prabhupada, but he loved Narayan, Chatur Bhuj, Rebati Nandan. Yes, that was his constitutional position. That's all right. Prabhupada, just like sometimes Madhurya Ras is the greatest humor. Rebati Nandan, who? Some misunderstanding. Prabhupada, Madhurya Rasa, conjugal love. But still, there are devotees who prefer parental love, friendly love. That is liking. Everyone has got his own liking. But they're all the same, all the same. There is no difference between Krishna devotee and Narayan devotee. They're all but that is their liking, varieties of liking. July 19, 1973. We shouldn't get caught up, although it's described that the Madhurya Rasa is better. It's not really a material thing. And any relationship with Krishna is perfect when you perfect it. Now, Maharaj Yudhisthira gets inspired by Krishna to take a last advantage of Bhishma Dev, who's such an encyclopedia of wisdom and Vedic Dharma, to ask him some questions about religion, like Varnashram Dharma. So this is for the benefit of everyone. And since so many people are present there, that's what devotees like to do, ask questions and hear knowledge spoken by an authorized person. So, Maharaj Yudhisthira, after hearing Bhishma Dev speak in that appealing tone, asked him in the presence of all the rishis about the essential principles of various religious duties. And then the verses say that in great detail, Bhishma Dev starts speaking all this systematically. It seems like he was going on for hours talking. And Prabhupada says he shouldn't have been asked a question in that situation, and it would seem that he was very inconvenienced because of the painful position he's in. But he was actually transcendental to it, and especially because he was looking on Lord Krishna. So he speaks like that. We're not given what he actually says in Srimad Bhagavatam, but we're told about it, that he speaks about the different orders of life and the different way that people can fulfill their dharma. This is important information for common humanity. If you're a Brahmin, what should you do? If you're a Kshatriya, what should you do? If you're a Brahmachari, what should you do? A Grihastha, what should you do? And all these things he spoke about. Again, proving that Bhishma Dev is a Mahajan, and not to be thought of as an enemy of the Pandavas, or as a military man, merely. So, we'll turn to the next section, which is 29 to 42, which is really a big one in terms of numbers of verses and also importance. That while he's speaking at length, then he notices that the sun is moving to the northern hemisphere. I don't know exactly what that means. In the ISKCON paintings, they show it as the sun setting. But his time was getting late for the auspicious departure to take place. And he's noticing it, that I'm talking and talking, but I better now finish up and just concentrate on one thing instead of this diverse kind of talk about religion for those who are living in this material world. Thereupon, that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men stopped speaking, and being completely freed from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, who stood before him, four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. When Srila Prabhupada was in his last days, we were reminded of different parts of the scriptures, and we were reminded of Bhishma also, especially by the idea of being in a difficult situation materially, painfully, and still giving spiritual instructions. Prabhupada was... different devotees would come and see Prabhupada, and he would give them encouragement to continue preaching in that part of the world, do this, do that. He was inquiring about them rather than expressing any discomfort. But then in the last couple of days, then he didn't communicate at all. So there's a time for communication, then a time for just concentrating. A purport: in the momentous hour of leaving his material body, Bhishma Deva set the glorious example concerning the important function of the human form of life. Now, Prabhupada has this in italics. The subject matter which attracts the dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. Therefore, if one is absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, he is sure to go back to Godhead without any doubt. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 8.5 through 15. And then the rest of this purport, Prabhupada just has translated the shlokas of 5 to 15 of the Bhagavad Gita. So Bhishma was not an impersonalist, certainly. He wanted to see the person, Krishna, before him. And we don't want to merge in Krishna and Sayujya liberation, but see our livable deity up until the last moment of our life, or hear about him. So what we get now in this chapter is it's not like he's not communicating, but he's only thinking of one thing, not just talking about Dharma anymore, but he just wants to fix on the personality of Krishna. So what he does, or what he gives us, is a series of meditations on Krishna, Krishna's pastimes or Krishna's qualities. Is usually one per shloka, and in this way he remembers Krishna. So this is something that is available to us also from Prabhupada's books, like Krishna book and Chaitanya Charitamrita. There are so many pastimes of Krishna. Can anybody tell me a pastime of Krishna or Chaitanya? Gauri, do you know one?
Any pastime?
Yeah.
Lifting over that.
Yeah. Anybody else? No one? Father?
He fell with the gopi's clothes.
Oh.
Krishna ran away from the battlefield. Not sure.
Yeah. Chaitanya?
He healed Putana by sucking out his her breast and all the lightly cords.
Right. So like that, if you can think, maybe you'll stay on one of those pastimes for some time and think about it in its detail, or you'll go from pastime to pastime with faith. You can think of Krishna like that, then you'll be able to actually go to Krishna. Let's look at the ones that came to Bhishma's mind in meditation. He thought of Krishna as the friend of Arjuna. And that's Krishna likes to be thought of in connection with his friends. You can say you're the controller of all the universes. But if you call him the friend of Krishna, Vijaya Sakhe, the friend of Arjuna, he likes that. So he thinks of Krishna in that way. Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the tamal tree. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruit or results. In his purport to that verse, Prabhupada makes an important point, which has already been brought up, about which relationship do you have with Krishna, and how we shouldn't think that one is better than another. Because we're in such a fruitive mentality, if we hear that one is better than another, we'll say, okay, then I want that one. I want to be better than everybody, so I'll have the Madhurya Ras. But we shouldn't think like that. So he talks about people who go cheaply to conjugal love, imitating the damsels of Brajadam. Such a cheap relation with the Lord exhibits only the base mentality of the mundaner. Because one who has relished conjugal humor with the Lord cannot be attached to worldly conjugal rasa, which is condemned even by mundane ethics. The eternal relation of a particular soul with the Lord is evolved. A genuine relation of the living entity, a living being, with the Supreme Lord can take any form out of the five principal rasas, and it does not make any difference in transcendental degree to the genuine devotee. Bhishma Deva is a concrete example of this, and it should be carefully observed how the great general is transcendentally related with the Lord. Then he sees Krishna on the battlefield. So he had the great advantage in terms of visual darshan of being able to see Krishna coming right at him. He had a better darshan than Arjuna did. Arjuna was behind Krishna, but he could see Krishna in all his glory. So he describes that. On the battlefield where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship, the flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hoofs of the Lord, and because of his labor, beads of sweat wetted his face. All these decorations, intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows, were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go unto Sri Krishna. This is the chivalrous humor of fighting. And Krishna wanted to have that and enjoy that with great devotees like Bhishma. So Prabhupada says, Sri Bhishma Deva is a great devotee of the Lord in the relationship of servitorship. Thus his throwing of sharp arrows at the transcendental body of the Lord is as good as the worship of another devotee who throws soft roses on him. And to make it more understandable, if it's not at all understandable, why the Lord would enjoy that. Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti here and says that he compares it to the wounds created on the body of a lover in sex activity, which is created out of amorous passion and is never taken as a sign of enmity. So Krishna received the wounds in that way. There's also, now that may seem, well, you say, well, that's got nothing to do with me and my relationship with Krishna. But here I found something else. This is from the Bhagavatam purport, 7.15.42, Prabhupada says, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented that because the words bow and arrow are used in this verse, one might argue that the Supreme Personality and the living entity have become enemies. However, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead may become the so-called enemy of the living being, this is his chivalrous pleasure. For example, the Lord fought with Bhishma, and when Bhishma pierced the Lord's body on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, that was a kind of humor or relationship. When the conditioned soul tries to reach the Lord by hurling an arrow at him, the Lord takes pleasure, and the living entity gains the profit of going back home, back to Godhead. And here's the crucial line. Similarly, if with the arrow of chanting the holy name of the Lord, one pierces Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, by dint of performing this heroic activity of devotional service, one receives the benefit of returning home back to Godhead. You have to pierce Krishna's lotus feet with the arrow of chanting. You can think of your chanting as sending arrows at Krishna. Have to keep your bow a very good grip on a good supple bow. Fire the arrows. Next, not only does Arjuna have a friendly relationship with Krishna, but he sometimes is dominating his Krishna because Krishna is the chariot driver. So Bhishma Deva, that wasn't lost on Bhishma Deva either. He says, in obedience to the command of his friend, Lord Sri Krishna entered the arena of the battlefield of Kurukshetra between the soldiers of Arjuna and Duryodhana, and while there he shortened the lifespan of the opposite party. This is that famous meditation that the Brahmin in South India had, that he kept thinking how Krishna is Krishna is carrying out the order of Arjuna. And when I think of this, I cry. The man who couldn't read the Bhagavad Gita, but he just thought of that one picture. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, your reading of the Bhagavad Gita is perfect. So Bhishma Dev also sees how Krishna is obedient, and he likes that also. The next one. When Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. What's that a reference to? Anybody know? Yes, the Bhagavad Gita he's talking about when Arjuna... He said, Krishna, please drive my chariot between the two armies and tell me who's on the other side to fight. So Arjuna said, yes, sir. And he went in between and he said to the commander, Arjuna, there's Drona, there's Bhishma. You have to fight them. And then Arjuna said, I don't want to fight them. At first they talked in a friendly way. And then Arjuna submitted himself as a disciple. And Krishna taught the Bhagavad Gita. Now here's perhaps the most famous of all meditations of Bhishma Dev. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. Prabhupada tells this story so much in his lectures that sometimes when I hear him starting it again, I say, oh no, he's not going to tell that again, is he? But then I calm down and listen, and it's good. So what is the promise? There are two promises here he's talking about. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise. So what was the desire of Bhishma in this exchange? Yes?
He wanted to be killed by Krishna.
He wanted to be killed by Krishna? Well, to refine your statement, we could say he wanted to see Krishna rushing toward him to kill him. Yeah?
That's what I was
saying. Yeah. He was ready to give up his life, but at that moment, the day's fighting stopped because they only fought until a certain hour, then so the day's fighting stopped and then Krishna didn't kill him. But he was satisfied to see Krishna was ready to kill him. More on this? Yeah, really.
He wanted to show us that Krishna's promise was less important than fulfilling the desire of his devotee.
Yeah.
He was willing to break his promise that he wouldn't fight because Bhishma was going to kill Arjuna.
Yeah. Those are the two main things. Look, Krishna has promised, my devotee will never be vanquished. And he also promised, I will not fight in this battle. So Bhishma was thinking, I want to get Krishna to save his devotee and by fighting against me, to kill me, and see if he'll break his other promise. So... He certainly protected Arjuna, and he picked up a wheel, and so he's forever famous as the wheel carrier, and he ran towards Bhishma to kill him. Yeah, and Bhishma dropped his weapons and was ready to be killed. The situation was so tense that Arjuna was about to be killed by Bhishma the very next moment. At that time, Lord Krishna wanted to please his devotee, Bhishma, by keeping Bhishma's promise, which was more important than his own. But Bhishma's promise was that I will kill those brothers. Seemingly, he broke his own promise. He promised before the battle of Kurukshetra that he would remain without weapons and would not use his strength for either of the parties. But to protect Arjuna, he got down from the chariot, took up the wheel of the chariot, and hurriedly rushed at Bhishma Dev in an angry mood, as a lion goes to kill an elephant. Bhishma Dev at once gave up his weapons and stood to be killed by Arjuna, his beloved lord. The fighting of the day was thus ended at that very moment, and Arjuna was saved. Bhishma Dev wanted to see Lord Krishna take up some weapon to save his friend. The Lord created this situation, making Arjuna's death imminent. He stood before Bhishma Dev to show him that his promise was fulfilled and that he had taken up the wheel. Because if Krishna didn't protect Arjuna, Arjuna would have been killed. So Bhishma forced the situation. Yeah, so he's remembering that. That's not a theoretical pastime. It's a pastime he was involved in. There may be certain pastimes of Krishna or experiences we have in Krishna consciousness that we can turn to deeper than others and help us to remember Krishna. Maybe some experience you had at the Holy Dham. And after they got back to Italy, there was one man, you may remember him, the older man, mm-hmm. Dina Diadra. He wrote me a letter and he said, he described this very intense experience he had chanting japa in front of Radha Govinda. It was kind of a thing that's confidential, but he wanted to tell me about it. And, you know, he just had a very intense, very auspicious spiritual experience. So those are the kind of things that we can remember, or maybe some bad time, and pray to Krishna, and to remember Krishna. Just like Bhishma is remembering actual pastimes in which he took place, took part in. We've already read about the, he again mentions about his giving the wounds to Krishna, and what that was. Now here's something else. It's not that only Bhishma and Arjuna and Krishna were present, but there were millions of people present. At the moment of death, let my ultimate attraction be to Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. I concentrate my mind upon the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, who was very careful to give protection to Arjuna's chariot by all means. Those who saw him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained their original forms after death. So everyone who was present there, especially those facing Krishna, facing Krishna, I mean those on the opposite side, they all got liberated. Earlier it says their lifespan was shortened, but it wasn't bad for them, because if they had stayed at home, they never would have gotten liberation by dying after an old age. But they, by seeing Krishna, they attained their swarupa. In Sanskrit it says hata, those who died, kata, attained swarupam, original form. And how? By niriksha, by looking. It's a wonderful verse. Let my attraction be unto he. They got out of the cycle of birth and death. So that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is so liberating, let me think of him. Bhishma Deva wanted the same facility also, and that was his prayer to the Lord, although his position as an associate of the Lord is assured in all circumstances. The conclusion is that whoever dies looking on the personality of Godhead, within or without, attains his swarupa, which is the highest perfection of life. And now, his next meditation, you see these like visual pictures passing through his mind in his last moments, is quite a surprise in the midst of all these chivalrous meditations. Let my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Brajadam, the gopis. The damsels imitated the characteristic movements of the Lord after his disappearance from the rasa dance. So he knew about Krishna, Vrindavan, and he knew about the gopis. Anyone who knows about Krishna must know about them too, and the wonderful pastimes, even if he doesn't have that relationship with Krishna. So he was asking for their blessings at the time he died. And the particular aspect of the gopis that he is interested in is how they were on an equal footing, as Prabhupada says, with the gopis, the way they exchanged. Purport: by intense ecstasy and loving service, the damsels of Rajabhumi attained qualitative oneness with the Lord by dancing with him on an equal level, embracing him in nuptial love, and smiling at him in joke. The relation of the Lord with Arjuna is undoubtedly praiseworthy for devotees like Bhishma Dev, but the relationship with the gopis with the Lord is still more praiseworthy because of their purified loving service. So Arjuna didn't have that relationship. The gopis were almost one with Krishna. It's very interesting. A person with one kind of swarupa asking that he could have the blessings of the gopis so that he could attain his swarupa, which was, we heard, with the Forearm Narayan. Next, he remembers Krishna at the Ras Rajasuya sacrifice. Rajasuya sacrifice, where Maharaj Yudhisthira performed the great costly sacrifice, and they had to install one person as the supreme person. So Krishna was chosen, and he was worshipped with great pomp there in the assembly of elite persons. So it must have been very pleasing for the devotees of Krishna to see the Lord, the cynosure of all eyes, and being praised by everyone except Sisupal, who quickly lost his head over his lack of appreciation for Krishna at the Rajasuya sacrifice. Well, that's another kind of pastime. Just like I asked you to think of pastimes and you shyly volunteered a bit of a pastime. So, I don't know why you're so stingy with your memories. But you can share them with other devotees and share them with the non-devotees. So this is another pastime that he remembered, Krishna at the Rajasuya sacrifice. And here's another one. And this is a verse, I'll read it, but first I'll tell you what it is. It's a verse, a meditation on the super soul. The Lord is a super soul. And this is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Krishnadas Kaviraj is building his argument towards Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First he proves that the Absolute Truth exists as the Brahman, impersonal Brahman, and then he describes it as Paramatma. And to convince us about the nature of Paramatma, he quotes Bhishma Deva's prayer. So in that sense, it's very famous. And Prabhupada gives the example from this verse also to describe the Paramatma. So once again, Bhishma Deva proves himself a great scholar of the Absolute Truth. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me. Now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. Prabhupada used to say that, say at noon, you look and you see the sun is over your head. And if you ask a person some miles away, where's the sun? He'll say, it's over my head. So it's the one sun, but it's perceived by each person. So Krishna has expanded himself, one Krishna, in each person's heart. So this this mystical knowledge of Krishna, it was known by Bhishma. So that's about all of the meditations were given And the rest of the verses, 43 to 49, tell of his actual passing away and how Yudhisthira took up the funeral rites. Thus Bhishma Dev merged in the Super Soul, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight, and actions, and thus he became silent and his breathing stopped. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute Truth, all present there became silent, like birds at the end of day. This doesn't mean he merged in an impersonal way. The whole point has been again and again, the personality of Godhead. But he does merge his spirit self into the supreme, leaving behind the material.